Oh, come on. There's more nerds in the room than that. Hey, I know. We were talking this week. Thank you, Kyle. We were talking this week in staff, and we're like, is anybody going to dress up for Comic-Con Sunday? And I'm like, Comic-Con Sunday? We dress up all the time around here, right? But I don't know if you have ventured out into downtown San Diego during Comic-Con. How many of you have been around there for Comic-Con this week? Yeah, we've got some few daring souls. I've seen some pictures. I myself have been there all 3 days. And I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I love going to see people dress up. And even though I didn't dress up, I still had a good time. But it is crazy down there. Now, as you all know, I like to start with something funny. And there was this elderly man who struggled with his hearing all his life. Went to the doctor, and the doctor fitted him with the highest tech new hearing aid that produced 100% hearing. All right, he was so excited, wore this hearing aid for several months, went back to the doctor for a checkup. The doctor tested him and said, it's 100%. It's perfect. Your hearing's perfect. Your family must be ecstatic. He's like, I haven't told my family. He's like, I still sit there. I let everybody talk. They think I can't hear, and I've changed my will 3 times. Okay, all right, I know. I told you, I try at my comedic jokes. We're going to close out today an 8-week series. 8 weeks is a long series, but it's on a topic that I think is so very important for all of us in our walk with Christ, and it's Christian. And today we're going to just have a recap. For those who haven't been in this series, maybe you're new today for the first time, you've actually probably popped in on a great day because you're going to hear a lot of things. We're going to rehash just a few weeks behind, and then we're going to land the plane today on what it really means to be a Christian and what Jesus meant from the scriptures of what a Christian really is. Because Christian is not a defined term, or an easily defined term. As a matter of fact, a lot of us maybe have been ostracized from church, we've not gone to church, or maybe it's the first time you're in a church, you heard Brent talk about that this is a place to where you're like, this is the last chance, because I'm not going back into another church that's going to judge me, or going to ridicule me, or whatever those things are. Because we, if you're from a religious church, if you're from a church, a spiritual background, then a lot of times you've had this definition of Christian, right here. Judgmental, homophobic, moralist, who think they are the only ones going to heaven and secretly relish the fact that everyone else is going to hell. Hello. Look at that. I'm going to leave that up there for a second. Because a lot of us have come from this type of mentality. And week one is what we talked about. There's two categories of people today that profoundly have impacted our lives. And it has nothing to do with what we believe, but how they've treated us. And that's where we're going to talk about, and that's where we're going to land this plane today. Christians are viewed like this. Remember what we said in week one. Christian is only used 3 times in the Bible. It is not defined by Jesus. It's not defined in the Bible. It's only given this name by non-followers of Jesus pertaining to the followers of Jesus, and it's used derogatory. Christians. Those Christians. And so with it not being easily defined, if I were to ask 30 people in this room today, what's your definition of a Christian? Do you know how many different answers I'd probably get? 30. Because, as you know, Christians can do about anything. They can be anything. We're on both sides of everything. War. Whether we should go to war. Whether we shouldn't go to war. Voting. Oh, wow. We're in a hot season, aren't we? I mean a political hotbed. And I have seen posts on both sides of this aisle. I mean, some that are unbelievable. Like, if you vote for this person, you're not a Christian. coming from a Christian. Or it can be the opposite. So when we talk about being a Christian, what about social issues? You've got some Christians that believe that there should be marriage equality. Then you got other Christians that do believe there should be marriage equality. And so that's why in week two, we also realized what Jesus named his followers. Because Christian is a broad spectrum. But what did Jesus call his followers? Disciples. And unfortunately, disciple is very well defined. It's very narrow, and we know exactly what it means. It's how we live our life. It's how we're supposed to respond to people. It's specifically how we treat other people. And remember, a disciple is somebody that signs up and says, I say yes, God, before you even ask me. Yes. A learner. Somebody, a pupil. We also talked about the Passover. At this time, after Jesus is talking to his disciples, he sat down at the table and he's like, okay, all this ministry that I've done, all these years of ministry I've been with you, I'm going to sum it up into one thing. This is it. This is the one thing that I want to pass down to you. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Not what you believe. Not whether you go to church every Sunday and you're a good Bible carrier. It's how you love one another, how you treat one another. And what happened? Somebody approached Jesus with a trick question. Now, this happened a lot. Jesus could handle himself. But here's what happened. They approached him and said, what of all the laws and commandments is the greatest, Jesus? Remember this? Now, there's over 600 laws in the Old Testament. 600, around 613 or 614 to be exact. But that's a lot of laws, all right? I have a hard time obeying the speed limit, which is one sometimes. You do too, I know. We're in San Diego, right? Whew, crazy drivers here in San Diego. But here's what he said. Here's the way he answered this trick question. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And before they had a chance to raise their hand or say anything else, he says, at the second, it's just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Wait, Jesus. We only asked for one. But Jesus says, wait, you can't have one without number two. All right. They work together. Number two is just as important as number one. You can't separate them. And before they could ask another question, listen to this. Jesus added something to this part that was so extraordinary, I don't even know how we've missed it. But 25 years after Jesus, Paul wrote about it. 30 or so years after, John wrote about it. And somehow we missed what is about to be said. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Meaning, every time I pick up my Bible, I've got to view it through this lens. Meaning that if I ever have a question about, am I doing the right thing? I need to look at it through this lens. Or, what does the Bible say on morality? What does it say about relationships? What does it say about times in struggle? Or maybe you lose somebody. A loss of a family member. Or a relationship. We must pick up and we must look and view things in the eye through the lens of this right here. Love God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Love God, love people. So here's the question this morning. What does love require of me? Okay, so if we know that the number one thing, when Jesus said it's filled out with this, you're my disciple, But the way people are going to know that you're my disciple is the way you love. Then it just so happens we need to ask this question. What does love then require of me? Now, if you're a Christ follower today, and I'm not saying everybody in the room is, because if you're like me, there was some stint where I started off as a Christian, but it was that first definition of a Christian. And a few years into that, I was like, I'm out of here. So it was that coming back. So some of you may even be battling as, I don't call myself a Christian. No. Mm-mm. Okay, that's fine. Maybe a Christ follower. Maybe somebody spiritual. Some of you say, I may not even do that. But if you're serious about this search, if you're serious about the search that we have right here, then here's the question that you have to ask. What does love require of me? Everything I encounter, everything I face, everything I debate, my personal relationships, I must step into the realm that Jesus has invited me to. And what it is? Love. It's love. By this will all men know that you're my disciples if you love. When Jesus started, I want you to think about this with me. When he started, he had no influence. Very few followers. Very little leverage. It was actually in the armpit of the Roman Empire. Do you realize that? He could have said anything he wanted to say. Could have given any message he wanted to give, and he had a lot of great message. But this is what he chose to say. This is what he chose to build his movement on and ultimately build the church on. I've mentioned this earlier, and I asked myself this question of, how do you take something like, what does love require of me, and us coming and sitting and listening to somebody talk about this, or talk about what Jesus said, or talk about what a disciple is, or talk about what a true Christian is, how do we take it from these doors and we live it? Because it's all nice to go, what does love require of me, and we walk out and we just walk around thinking, well, what does love require of me? But how do we practically apply what does love require of me? And I think this is the brilliance of the statement that Jesus said. I mentioned this. There's two categories of people who have made you what you are today and influenced you profoundly. Two. Only two. The partner that you are. The wife that you are. The husband that you are. The leader that you are. Maybe how you treat other people. Maybe what you're involved in. And you know, sometimes it's not even church people. Sometimes it's non-church people. But here's the two categories. You ready? You ready for this? Here it is. Those who've hurt you and those who've loved you. Those who've hurt you deeply and those who've loved you profoundly. For those of us who run up against obstacles in life and we need to go speak to people, go to a counselor, a good counselor is going to take you here. Those who've hurt you, those who've loved you. Many of us have been hurt by people who have very accurate theology. They knew what they believed. But they destroyed your soul. There's a lot of us that go through life right now in our adult experience, and I've heard it said that I'm handicapped because of what I've gone through. I'm handicapped to what I face. It's not a theology or a belief. It's not what it's about. It's about who you were hurt by and how you were hurt. We see it all in our society today. Just turn on the news. I'll be honest with you, I don't watch a lot of news anymore. You can't get away from it on social media. That's usually where I pick mine up. But when I sit down and turn the news on, I cannot keep a positive attitude. I want to do bad things to my TV. It doesn't matter what issue it is. Or it just makes me so sad. When I think about those that hurt you, those that hurt us, I think about, as we walk through life handicapped, a young man that I spoke to probably 6 months ago, and for the reference of this story, I'm going to call him Shane. But he was telling me of his battles of his sexuality, because he is attracted to girls, but he's kind of attracted to guys. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with MG, there's no subject that's off limits here. And you're going to hear, we say we're R for reality, because that's what we are. We're rated R. But this young man loves the intimacy of a woman, but he loves the emotional compatibility of a man. And he sat down with me and he said, "Eric, this is where I have an issue. It's because when I was 9 years old, my mom's friend, guy friend, would invite me over to play Nintendo and he would give me pot at 9. And then he would do stuff to me. Then I went into foster care, and my dad's, at the age of 11, one of my dad's, gave me porn for the first time. And then, while he wanted me to pleasure myself, he would sit in the room and watch me. And he said, now, as a mid-20s or late 20s-year-old young man, he's like, I know it wasn't right, but it's all I knew. It would go into sexual abuse. It would go into a life filled with being hurt by someone that has crippled him. And now he is in this ambiguous state of not knowing who he is. Now, as a ministry, we believe that there are bisexual individuals. We stand on that. But when we talk about those who've hurt you, and we talk about abuse, and we talk about people who have been molested or raped or abused, what we know is that those who hurt us has turned us into, or made us, or had an influence on who we are today. And actually, one of our young ladies, who was one of the first young ladies in our house, in our 8 West house, transgender young lady, we rescued from Lifeline sex trafficking. Because at age 14, all she knew was she was kicked out of her home, and her mom found out she could make money by selling her son at the time. And so now this young lady, at 22 years old, all she knows is love from selling her body. And you know what? It's normal to her. Those who've hurt you have profoundly affected you and made you who you are today. Now here's the others. They didn't have the theology correct. They didn't know the right prayer to say. Sometimes they would say, I don't even know if I believe the same way, or I don't know what I believe sometimes, but you know what? I love you. Maybe it's a coach. Maybe it's a teacher. Maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's a friend. Unlike anything else, instead of taking life from your soul, they gave life into your soul. You lead from the experience you have had in these two areas. Those who've hurt you and those who've loved you. All of us, we can't escape it. Here's the statement. The way you've been treated has more to do with who you are than what you believe. Let me repeat it. The way you've been treated has more to do with who you are than what you believe. It's important as his followers that we get this. This is the best play Now, leverage is sometimes not a good word, especially in a hotbed political environment, but leverage can be very good, all right? Especially when somebody's under a car and you have to leverage something to get them out. Leverage can be good, and in this case, I want you to understand that Christianity, the church, lost its leverage, but we lost it a long time ago. We didn't lose it last year. We didn't lose it because George Bush got into office. We didn't lose it because Obama's in office, or Clinton before him. We did not lose it in recent. We lost it a long time ago, and here's why. Look at this. When it started, when Jesus started his ministry, he started with the word behave. It was about behave. It's about how you love. It's about what you do. It's about how you treat other people. How you act. How you behave. But here's what happened. It turned into what you believe. It got away from behave and got to what you believe. If we would simply do what Jesus said instead of arguing about what he said, then maybe the world would change. And maybe the influence of the world would change. Now, we kind of understand this, but Jesus could have said this. A new command I give to you, that you believe correctly. By this, all men will know that you're my disciples if you believe correctly. Did he say that? No. He didn't say that. Time and energy and months and money spent on arguing about what Jesus meant because of a statement like this. What do you believe? The beginning was simple. At the beginning, when Jesus started it all, it was simple. What does love require of me? When you interact with people like Jesus did, he interacted with them with their story in mind. Have you ever been around somebody and you're like, why do they act like that? Like, why do they pitch a fit like that? Or why are they so calm? Have you ever been around those people and then you find out their story and you're like, I get it. Jesus interacted with every individual with their story in mind. Every single one. How do I live this out? Here is where we're going to land the plane on this series today. Take it out of the realm of just what does love require of me and the theoretical. And not just believing the right things, but treating people in a way that leads them to a personal relationship with their God through his son Jesus. Okay? It's not just about loving to love. It's about loving people and pointing them to the message of Jesus. Amen. And what are those things? Number one, don't do anything that will hurt you. Number two, don't do anything that will hurt someone else. And number three, don't be mastered by anything. Don't do anything that will hurt you. Don't do anything that will hurt someone else. And don't be mastered by anything. When I hurt me, I hurt you. When I hurt me, or you hurt you, you hurt the ones that love you. Now, for those of you who are parents in the room, you really get this. You get this more than somebody like me who is not a biological parent. Because when your kid does something to hurt themselves, it kills you. It hurts you. Now, I experience it some now with the guys and girls that are in our program because I have more, I'm the type of person, they laugh because it's hard for me to say no to anything. But I'm the guy that comes in and just wants to hug people's necks and talk to them about who they are, and I'll take them down to the store, or we hang out, you know, and we do the fun stuff. When it comes to the discipline stuff, I give that to Lindsay and the other people. So I guess it's like I can't believe I'm about to say this, but that was always like a grandparent mentality. Now I'm nowhere near that age, but I'm just saying, I get that feeling because when the guys or girls in our program do something to hurt themselves, they have a relapse or they have something go down or somebody falls off the wagon and all this stuff, I am crushed. I am crushed. Maybe a business and employees, your employees do something that affects you. Your moral decisions, your business decisions. You know, Jesus loved us so much that he came and died for us. And you say, look, my life is my life. It's me and me. No, it's not just you and you. Because of the reputation now, and the reputation not only of yourself, but what Jesus has done for you. So Jesus loved you so much that when you hurt you, you hurt him. And when you hurt you, you hurt those that love you. So don't hurt you. Don't do anything that will hurt someone else. Oh, here we go. Buckle up. You ready for this, church? Interpersonal relationships, regardless of how I view the world, where I am in my maturity, my fellow man, even your enemies are those we don't understand. Even those that hurt us the most. Everyone is someone that Jesus died for and that God loves just as much as you.
Amen.
That's real tough. You say, you don't know what that did to me. I don't. But I know this. I know what Jesus did for him. We live in a world to where we're constantly told who our enemies are by people who don't have a clue. The Muslim community. The African American community. The gay community. The law enforcement community. Shall I keep going? Right-wing conservatives. You know the crazy ones that get on TV? We probably talk about this in our church more than anything else. Now, it's a roundabout way because we face a society and a culture that is built on, if you wrong me, I'm going to pay you back. But that's not the message that Jesus gave. And when I say we've lost leverage because in point number two, if we don't do anything, that means say. That means I can't be rude to you. That means I shouldn't be. You know, we don't like those words, I can and can't. I'll show you. There it goes again. You see? That means I've got to say things that are not rude. I have to treat people with respect. I can't do anything, no matter who you are, that's going to hurt you.
Amen.
The filter I use my words through will not hurt, betray, abuse, deceive, tempt anyone else. It's a tough one. But that's the challenge. And then number three, don't be mastered by anything. Why? It will keep you from loving someone. When you're mastered by something, it will keep you from loving someone. No one should have to compete with your alcoholism. No one should have to compete with your prescription drug issues. No one should have to compete with your hang-up. Maybe you're a workaholic. Maybe you're whatever those things are in your life. We're not a church that says, here's your list of do's, here's your list of don'ts. If you line up in the do's, welcome in. If you're in the don'ts, well, we'll pray for you, okay? And when you get over to the do's, no, we know what that is. That's where we came out of. It's not about that. But if you're mastered by anything, then it's going to get in the way of what love requires me to do. And that first starts with understanding what God is for me and his role. We cannot love as long as we're mastered. Some of you are like, I'm so glad Eric is here to hear this message today, or John, or Candy, or I'm so glad they're here to hear this message because they really need this message, you know? We have that tendency, don't we? We let God take care of those around us, and we do these three things. Don't do anything that will hurt you. Don't do anything that will hurt someone else, and don't be mastered by anything. When we leverage anything other than love, next slide, Brian, we lose our leverage. When we leverage anything other than love, we lose our leverage. Not because of war, not because of politics, denominations, any of that. When the church had the time in history to where we could have influence over legislation, we had influence over government, we had influence over everything in our society, guess what? We chose not to leverage the message of Jesus. So we didn't leverage love. We didn't love. A lot of people put power in there. A lot of people put control in there. But that's when we lost it. Many decades ago, we lost it. A handful of Jesus followers, all they had, they didn't have the New Testament. All they had was this, love. They backed into it all the time. Maybe they had received a letter from Matthew. Maybe if they lived in Corinth, they got one or two letters from Paul. But that's it. They didn't have the New Testament. They didn't have anything but love one another. People were challenged by what they saw. Not coerced, but drawn. Maybe felt guilty, but not condemned. What do you mean? Well, what would it be like to walk into a community or people that had a profound impact because of the way they treat each other in a marriage relationship or just a partnership? And they're so kind, and you're like, man, wow. Or what about a business person who is so much about love and so much about the way you treat other people that it's so evident of the way they act and conduct their business that it blows your mind? And you're like, oh my, I want to work for somebody like that. What happens when things change and everything happens and we react so differently and we're challenged to change because of the example that was given to us? I want to bring this to a more personal level. Many of you know I left the church. And I was disenfranchised, and I was done. I was done with God. I was done with the church. Done. And in the process of coming back, one of my closest friends in all the world, I'd travel and sing all over the world, and he would speak in these places, and my buddy Esteem sitting back there. And we started building a relationship to where he was like my mentor. Now, I didn't go to Esteem and say, like, hey, you want to be my mentor? Because I need one. Because I didn't think I needed a mentor. I think I'm fine. But I needed a mentor. And I was so disenfranchised by God and the church that anything related to prayer or you talk spiritually or you start talking like that, like, how can I pray for you? I'd really turn you off. At first, I was pretty dogmatic about it. And I would tell you, I don't want you asking me questions like that. But then I would soften up some. Because you got to remember, I was so hurt. And I became the person profoundly impacted by those who hurt me. So God had to send somebody in my life to show me that other side. Someone that loves you so deeply that it changes your life. I would come to San Diego and I would stay with Esteen and his wife Karen, and we would do things. Esteen and I would work out together. But there were little things he did that at first I was just like, what is going on? Because we'd be at the grocery store and he would be so kind to the cashier. How's your day? How are you doing? Just super kind. He'd smile at people. He'd walk by people on the street. And if they needed food, he'd give them some food or maybe give them a dollar. And then we'd get in his truck and we'd be going down the hill and he'd pull over and he'd be like, let's just stop and pray and thank God for this view. And I was like, what? That's so weird. Who does that? Remember where I was. And I kept seeing this day after day, month after month. I'm like, and then he'd treat me the same way. I'd talk about my craziness, because I've been through some crazy times, let me tell you. And I could tell him anything I was going through. Never judged me. He'd laugh with me, still love me. Challenge me to be a better person. Challenge me to be a better businessman. Challenge me to be a better spiritual leader. So he never condemned me, never coerced me, but I was drawn. I felt guilty. He didn't condemn me, but I knew I had to change. I knew I needed to treat these people different. I knew I needed to love people. I knew I didn't need to be rude. I knew I had to deal with the people that hurt me from the church. But because of his role of loving me, it changed me. And God uses people. The same reason you're sitting here and maybe you're pissed off at the world and every day you get up and you're pissed off at something and you're upset and just because it's just bad or whatever, or because you get up and you're like, you know what, I'm going to make this a great day. I'm going to go do something. It all is going to be dependent right now on what you do from this point on, how you love or how you hurt. How you love people around you or how you hurt people around you. And it's never okay, whether you think you're right or not. It's never okay to hurt. So from this today, we're going to have to go from the place of who has hurt me and how I deal with that and make sure that I don't hurt me, I don't hurt someone else, and I'm not controlled by anything. As we close this morning, it's a hard thing when we talk about how we've been hurt. Esteen, let me just say this. I emailed Esteen or texted him yesterday to ask permission if I could mention this story in him. Because I sometimes don't think that we realize the impact that we have on people. It's just the littlest things. The littlest thing can break somebody's soul. Or the littlest thing can bring life into somebody's soul. I would not be standing here today. I would not be back in ministry if it wasn't for that man and what he has done to speak life and love into my heart. If this ever characterizes my life, or your life, or the church again, there will be leverage that we can't imagine. You cannot preach people into loving Jesus. You cannot preach people into loving each other. It doesn't matter who's up here speaking. Can't do it. You can't legislate the way you act. We can't legislate or preach people into not having affairs and cheating on their partner. We can't legislate people who are addicted to substances that they won't do it anymore. We can't make them feel guilty or impatient. Only when it's seen can it be so attractive that it's almost irresistible. Jesus did that exact thing. He sat at this table. And as his disciples were there, his disciples, he said to them, remember this. All men will know that you are my disciples if we love one another. What does love require of me? Do you know what it required of Jesus? Jesus took the bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body that I'm going to give, and to show you an example that this is what true love is." And then he took the wine and he poured it. And he said, "This is my blood that is shed for you. Remember me." Why? Because I lived what I'm telling you. That's what Jesus said. "By this, everyone know that you are my disciples if you love." Maybe, just maybe, it could be said of us, just like it was the first century Christians, that we love so incredibly that they must be a Christ follower. Maybe, as we've learned in this 8-week series of why we need a rebrand, just maybe we'll be a part of the rebranding of Christianity because we are true disciples. I'm going to ask our communion service to come forward this morning. We serve open communion here at Mission Gathering. This side is grape juice. This side is wine. This morning as you come, will you ask that simple question? What love requires of me? God, we want to say thank you for sending your son Jesus, for loving us and giving us the example and setting the pace for who we are supposed to be, the way we're supposed to be, but really the way we're supposed to love. Empower us. Empower us to love. Not to hurt ourselves. Not to hurt others and to not be mastered by anything. Thank you for a family and a community like this. Come when you're ready. What does love require of me?